everybody. Welcome to the World Union of Deists podcast. I'm your host, Tim Wingate, and we have a wonderfully exciting and informative program for you today. We certainly hope that you are having a wonderful day, whenever it is that you're listening to the World Union of Deists podcast. And we are very happy that you're joining with us. I have a very special guest who is joining me today. Her name is Linda, and she's from Great Britain. Linda is also our World Union of Deists contact for Scotland. And Linda has a wonderful story, a sad story, but yet she has written several articles, two in particularly, that are on the World Union of Deists website, and we have included in our most recent update, which is called Deism, A Living, Breathing, Joyous Way of Life. And I think you will find that this is a very unique and uplifting and absolutely wonderful story. Linda, are you on the line with us?
I am, Tim. Hello.
Hello, Linda.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. I am so glad that you've been able to join with us and have to be on the podcast with me today. I look forward
to hearing
your story and finding out a little bit about you. So, Linda, let's get into your story a little bit here. And, you know, I'm going to kind of cut you loose, so to speak, to tell us your story, and I probably have some questions here I can get into. And I one thing I did want to mention is that my wife read your both the articles you wrote and was just thoroughly touched, and wanted to send her encouragements toward you, make sure that I let you know that she really was touched by your stories and thanked you for your wonderfully encouraging attitude.
Well, thank you for that, Tim, and thank your wife also. I guess the place to start is the incident that made me start looking at all the world's religions and various belief systems, philosophies, the meaning of life, which was as I said in my first article, and I think my first email contact with Bob Johnson, the founder of the World Union of Deists. I was involved in the 7/7 bombings on the London tube and buses.
That was in 2005.
2005, correct. Yes. We just remember 7/7 like you remember 9/11, yeah.
Right.
So we just say 7/7. I don't really remember the year that much. But anyway, that year, I was with a friend waiting to catch a tube, which is what we called the subway here. And my husband was on that tube train, and he got blown up, and he died of subsequent injuries. He didn't actually die in the actual bombings. He actually died quite painfully. And I got injured because I'm a first aider. I think you use that term there, don't you?
A first aider or a paramedic.
Yeah. So I stayed behind to help people. And at that stage, all we'd heard was a loud, all we saw basically was smoke, and there was a lot of confusion. And the first thing that people thought was there was a fire. Nobody thought it was a bomb. I'm not sure I would have been so brave if I'd actually known it was a bomb, you know. But I stayed behind, and as a result of that, I got injured by the crowds running over me as I stayed behind to help people. So, I mean, because people were panicking, obviously. There was a lot of panic. I also got some debris on me. Some debris fell on me, including quite a lot of glass. Fortunately, I could have lost one of my eyes, but didn't. My friend had gone upstairs because you're not allowed to smoke on trains, underground trains, or any trains in the UK. When I was coming up, I was looking for my husband, and he saw me, and I was basically in shock, and I was just wandering around looking for my husband.
Sure.
Basically, the emergency service had started to come into effect, and we got taken off to hospital, and it wasn't until next day that I actually could find my husband, because it was very, very confusing. And it was only sort of, well, I'd been hearing that it was actually a bomb, and it was a bit paradoxical with me, because I used to live in a place called Canary Wharf, which is the highest, in one of the highest buildings in London. And after 9/11, I actually moved out of there because I was afraid of getting a bomb attack there. So nobody was expecting it on the tube. And I just, all it really, because I've been trained, I'm trained as a social worker, and I'm trained in crisis management, I went on automatic pilot. But it was like being in a film, you know, it was like watching yourself in slow motion, and I just went on automatic pilot. Pardon?
Surrealistic.
Very, 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 very. And it wasn't until about 2 or 3 days after the event, when I'd found my husband, that it really sunk in what could have happened. It's like there's a protective mechanism in the body or in the mind for you to cope with trauma. And then all I remember was about 2 or 3 days later, I was sitting in the hospital because my husband was still in hospital and I was in a wheelchair. And I just suddenly started thinking, and it was like quite a warm day. And I just started shaking. I felt absolutely frozen, and I was absolutely shaking with the cold. And I learned it was something called post-traumatic stress disorder. And
yes.
Suddenly all the sort of...
PTSD.
It had set in. So, I mean, to not dwell on that too much, my husband died about 2 months later.
About 2 months later. How long had... You know, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for that. That's a long time, and a lot of hope was there, I'm sure, that he was going to recover.
Absolutely,
and quite a sad disappointment. My heart goes out to you.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's so difficult to see a loved one in a situation like that, and I know that. I had a little medical crisis earlier this year, and my wife has, told me about how she felt during that time and how difficult it was. I'm curious, did you have any children, or do you?
I had 3 adopted children because I actually couldn't have children, and my husband had 4 children, and so we had... I had 7 children altogether, but they were grown up.
Oh, my. They were all grown
up.
I see.
Yeah,
well,
but it still really
affected them. Sure.
Yeah. And it was
How long were you and your husband married?
About 15 years. So we raised a lot of the children together, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, so we were a really close family, and he was my... third husband. I'd had 2 when I was very young, which I'm still friends with them, but they were mistakes, really. But he was like my soulmate, you know. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Well,
he is my soulmate.
Yes, and death and separation and tragedy and PTSD. This is all, unfortunately, part of the human condition, and these kinds of things do happen. And I commend you for your grit, your stamina in going through these things. There must have been some very dark times throughout all of this. Go ahead.
Very, very, very dark. And the other thing that I found was, in a sense, you were alone, because people dealt with it in different ways, and I'm not sure, but we have something here called the Samaritans. I'm not sure what you call it in your country, but it's if you feel suicidal, you can ring a telephone number, and volunteers talk to you on the other end.
Types of things. Yes, we do have similar types of things, yeah.
Well, a lot of people were ringing that service here. And the actual volunteers at the other end couldn't deal with it because nobody, you know, you can train somebody, like I'm trained in social work, you can to a degree, you can train somebody to deal with things like child abuse or people feeling depressed or something like that, but nobody's been trained in how to help you when you've been bombed, you know. It's not something that people are trained to do.
Right.
So I ended up joining a group of survivors.
Sure.
Yeah, the survivors supported each other. That's how it worked out.
Well, that's good. So you worked out having a survivor network, and of course, as your story goes on, which we will get to in just a couple minutes, because we do have to break for a commercial.
Okey-doke.
Commercials. Let's just say infotainment. Something like that.
Okay.
Something like that. But we do have to take a break. Folks, you're listening to the World Union of Deists podcast, Tim Wingate, and my guest, Linda, from Great Britain, talking about her story and how she came to deism. We'll be right back. It's only a couple minutes. Stick around. You're going to really enjoy this story.
Books, DVDs, and videos. Deism.com has the resources you need to understand, support, and spread the message of liberty, free thought, and tolerance in our world today. You'll find two books written by the founder and director of the World Union of Deists, Bob Johnson, An Answer to C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity and Deism, Our Revolution in Religion, Our Revolution in You, along with The Age of Reason, a complete edition by Thomas Paine. This book contains not only The Age of Reason, Part 1st and Part 2nd, as most editions do, but it also contains Part 3rd, which very few other editions offer. Plus, it contains all of Thomas Paine's essays and correspondence regarding God, deism, religion, etc., which no other current edition offers. Paine's profound and life-improving insights become crystal clear in this enlightening collection. This is the complete, powerful package. In An Answer to C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity by Bob Johnson is a powerful, thought-provoking book which addresses the Christian classic by C.S. Lewis, Mere Christianity. Each and every claim made by Lewis in support of Christianity is put to the test of our God-given reason, and each point fails. This is a well-documented book which will help deists and all free thinkers do well in debates with Christian apologists. It's also an important instrument to use to help realize the distinction between God and religion. As a young Bible college student, I experienced firsthand Mere Christianity as an apologetic for Christianity. It was required reading, and chapter summaries were required writing. At that time, having recently come out of high school debate and argumentation, I was unsettled by the unquestioned acceptance of Lewis's poor syllogisms and unsound conclusions. Going on to other divinity schools that required hermeneutics, exegesis, critical thinking, and argumentation, I still found Lewis problematic. I put the book on the shelf for many years, finding it lacking in genuine critical appraisal of its subjects. It was a joy to finally read a critical appraisal and critique of Lewis's discomforting exegesis and almost complete lack of sound hermeneutics. Reading An Answer to C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity, I can see that my earlier discomfort came from a plethora of unsound and untrue premises that led to faulty logic and, as a result, unsound and untrue conclusions. This, of course, is typical of most Christian theology. Paraphrase Thomas Paine, theology is the study of nothing about no thing. Bob has given us an excellent apologetic that disproves the false logic and syllogisms of C.S. Lewis's apologetic. Bob gives a page-by-page, paragraph-by-paragraph, point-by-point dissection of the many false paradigms offered by Lewis. Just to mention a few of them, Bob pulls no punches in assailing Lewis's assertions and assumptions of biblical inerrancy with historical facts, while showing that Lewis had a nationalistic, ulterior motives for much of his book. Bob also exposes that Lewis had embraced the faulty social theory of Leo Strauss, that created super Zionism. If you have mere Christianity, you owe it to yourself to get this excellent counterpoint. Don't let the Christian propagandists keep you from an answer to C.S. Lewis's mere Christianity. In Deism, A Revolution in Religion, A Revolution in You by Bob Johnson, this book presents deism as a natural and rational bridge that unites our reason to our belief in God, propels us from the false and destructive ancient myths to a space-age belief system that is in line with our God-given reason. Written in a concise and cogent style, Deism, A Revolution in Religion, A Revolution in You is a great introduction to deism, as well as a solid source of profound growth material for deists who have already had a firm understanding of the basics. This book covers some of the very important topics, such as the difference between God and religion, the power of deism to help people in their personal lives, as well as to help society progress. The ability of deism to diffuse the Christian push for violence and world war based on their potentially self-fulfilling prophecy of Armageddon. Deism being the more rational choice over atheism and agnosticism, among many other critical and important issues. So go to www.deism.com. Look for the main section on the left side of the page. Look for the books, DVDs, and video link near the bottom and click the link. Order a book for yourself and for someone you think would benefit from it. The time for deism is now.
Okay, we're back. Thanks for sticking with us. Tim Wingate here with the World Union of Deists podcast, and I have my guest Linda from Great Britain. And we were talking about her story, how she was involved in the 7/7 bombings, 7th of July in 2005, that occurred across Great Britain. And she and her husband were both in one of the underground, or subways as we call them here, bombings, involved in that. And her husband subsequently died of his injuries. And Linda herself has been, I hate to use the word crippled. What would you define it as, Linda, your physical condition now? Hobbled?
Well, unable to walk, I guess, yeah. I mean, I think crippled is, you know, it's...
injured, definitely injured. So.
Well, I mean, and the sort of sad thing was that I had an operation, but they were not able to... What I actually had was very severe, something called peripheral neuropathy, which means the nerves have gone in my feet. So I can't put my feet on the ground without pain. And it's a complicated area of surgery, and they couldn't actually do anything about it. So then I was in a lot of pain, and after the death of my husband, I then had to adjust to the fact that I wouldn't walk for the rest of my life.
That's a trauma in and of itself,
hard.
Right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Let alone
I used to do a lot of hiking, you know, and that was, you know, I think the mental adjustment to that was actually probably worse than the physical adjustment. The mental, having to mentally suddenly take that on board, yeah.
Uh-huh.
One good thing that's happened to me, though, is that I've got good pain control now. And believe me, being in constant physical pain is one of the worst experiences I've ever had. Yeah.
Yes, I can certainly identify with you, although I can't, you know, say that I share the same kinds of pain. But even with the neuropathy, as you called it, I have a issue as a result of my operation that is minimal compared to yours, but it is a constant aggravation, and it's a reminder, and it's no fun whatsoever. Well, I thought maybe we could move on to talking about how in these dark days, these dismal days, you must have been asking, you know, why did these kind of things happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm making an assumption, but during these times, what happened and how did you start then questioning religion or revealed religion?
Okay, I will say that at that time I was living in London, and the first thing I'm going to say about the religious aspect is I lived in an area of London that had a large Muslim population, and strangely enough, my downstairs neighbour where I lived upstairs, was a Muslim lady. My doctor, my GP, what we call a general practitioner, was a Muslim, and I had quite a few Muslim friends, and all of the people I knew completely accepted that it was done by people claiming to act in the name of Islam. That's one thing I really want to emphasize, because they really wanted to disassociate themselves from the actions of those people. But at never at any point did any of them believe in what we call the false flag, that it was done by any people other than people claiming to represent Islam. That was never up for debate. I believe that. So that's one thing I want to get out of the way, because I've heard some people question that. I think there's sufficient evidence to say that it was done by Islamic extremists. So the first people I started talking to about that were actually Muslims. And one of them, my neighbor downstairs, she gave me a copy of the Quran in English. I'd never read the Quran before. I was brought up as a Christian, and I'd been exposed to other faiths such as Buddhism and Hinduism, because I'd done a lot of traveling, but had never really looked at Islam. And so she gave me this copy of the Quran. I also actually ended up meeting the local imam, which is like a priest at the local mosque, and had a long conversation with him. But I actually started reading the Quran, and I saw even in the Quran written in English, it started to say that it was okay to kill the infidels. It's a bit like the Bible, really. You know, you can use the Bible or the Quran to promote peace, and you can use it to distort. You can use it also if you take other things written in it. It contradicts that message. So I started. I thought I actually read the whole Quran. So
very
I was
few
so
Christians
wanting to,
bothered.
I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say very few Christians have even bothered to read their own Bible, let alone any other sacred books of other religions.
Exactly, and I was brought up on the Bible. I went to what we call a church school in England, and that is run by the... See, that there is no this division of state and church that's meant to exist in England actually doesn't exist. I was brought up in a Church of England school, and that's the church that the Queen is the head of. Yeah?
Yes.
And she's also the head of state,
the
so there is
right
no division here. Divine right of kings, yes. But I became a Baptist when I was 16, and I got baptized. And but as I got older, I started to see the contradictions in the Bible as well. So I, at the time I was reading the Quran, I'd stopped being a Christian. But I thought maybe the Quran could give me some idea as to why what had happened to myself and my husband had actually happened, but it didn't give me any answers, really.
Oh, my.
But at least I explored it.
Well,
it's
I have to give you, you know, big creds for that. That's for sure. You
well,
looked to,
I'm,
you know, maybe these people were right. Maybe I am an infidel.
Well, you know what, I tell you, there's a thing called the fourth surah. which means like the fourth chapter, and it's all about women. And as soon as I to the bit where it said I'm worth half a man, I sort of thought, I don't agree with this.
this
is not for me.
I remember my I don't remember which daughter. I think it was my oldest daughter. I have three. Yeah, I told my wife and my daughter, I'm not going to defend that guy, Paul.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, I remember my mother. I grew up in a very, we were fundamentalist evangelical Pentecostals.
Denomination
I grew up in, and I remember my mother, who was a big Bible scholar along with my father, but I remember she's always had difficulty with Paul's position.
Yeah. I got rid of Paul years ago.
yeah. Well, they did teach me to think for myself and be independent-minded, and I saw how they struggled with that, their Christianity, over the years, and the contradictions, and they worked out some mental gymnastics in their own minds to try and hang in and stay in what they felt was a comfortable position within it. Anyway, what I wanted to do is just very quickly here, Bob, in his wonderful book, Deism, A Revolution in Religion, A Revolution in You, on page 17, he has a quote from Thomas Paine from the Age of Reason about, it's very short, it says, contrary to what many clergy members may say, rejection of their unreasonable claims does not make us infidels. For as Thomas Paine wrote in The Age of Reason, quote, it is necessary to the happiness of man that he be mentally faithful to himself. Infidelity does not consist in believing or in disbelieving. It consists in professing to believe what he does not believe, unquote. I think, I don't remember who said it, but to thine own self be true.
I can tell you who said that.
Was that Shakespeare? Ah, okay. I always get him and Descartes mixed up with I Think, Therefore I Am.
No, but it's basically, I love that saying, to your own self be true. Then it follows as night follows day, thou canst be false to no man. That's the saying.
Oh, that's right. That is the rest of the quote.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, I think what we're going to do is we'll take a break right now. Don't go anywhere, anybody. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Please stick around. This is Tim Wingate with the World Union of Deist podcast with my guest Linda from England. And she's telling us a fascinating story about how she came to deism. And we will get into that right after the break. So don't go anywhere. Stick around. You'll be glad you did. Have you ever been imposed upon by religious fundamentalists, Baptists, Pentecostals, Mormons, or Jehovah's Witnesses? Perhaps you heard a knock at your door, expecting a friend or family member, but instead, you found a religious fanatic whose only interest was to witness to you, to ensure your thinking was the same as his or hers, thus saving you from eternal hell. If you don't know quite what to say in situations like this, or if you just want to give them something to think about, we have just the thing. They are the Deist Reality Cards, and they're back by popular demand. It is an attractive business card size laminated card you can carry with you anywhere and at any time. It has listed on it 5 impossible to answer questions based directly on contradictory and spurious Bible passages, along with their chapter and verse citations. The effect this powerful little card will have on charlatans is to turn them off to you completely. The effect it will have on the sincere proselytizer is to make them think, question, and reason. Order your card or cards now and never again fall prey to the fanatics of the revealed religions. Buy one or your choice of several sets of Deist Reality Cards. Get all 10 sets of Deist Reality Cards free with your 9-month, 1-year, 2-year, 5-year, or lifetime subscription to Deistic Thought and Action. Go to the www.deism.com website and click on the subscribe link at the top of the page. The Deist Reality Cards. Don't answer the door without them.
Okay, welcome back, everybody, to World Union of Deists podcast. Tim Wingate here, your host, with my guest Linda from Great Britain. Our contact, our World Union of Deists contact for Scotland. And you can find that just on our website, www.deism, and that's D-E-I-S-M. Remember, our new mnemonic is I before E, except after D, especially if the word is deism. Deism.com, and if you look on the top right, you'll see something that says a link for contacts. If you hit that, you'll be able to contact anybody in the United States, and we have a number of contacts around the world, so please, if you would like information, you can either contact a local representative for you, or please feel free to contact us at deism.com if you have any questions and inquiries. We'll be happy to answer them. So, Linda, we were talking before the break about how you had decided that Islam was not necessarily for you. Where did you go after that?
After that, I had a brief encounter with what I guess you could call alternative spirituality. New Age. I think it's called the New Age. And they had a philosophy that I'd already rejected. As I said, I had I'd already had some limited. I'm just going to turn my. Sorry about that. I'd already had some brief association with Hinduism and Buddhism. The reason I went to that was.
You had some encounter with New Ageism along with some Eastern religions or philosophies?
I'd already looked at Buddhism and Hinduism after I rejected Christianity, because I rejected the idea that one person could pay the sins of the world by dying. It seemed wrong. And then I came across something called karma, which is that people have many lives, and the conditions that they're born into in this life is a result of their previous wrongdoings or right doings in a previous life. And I found it's called karma, and I found that the New Age adopted that stance. And I looked at it, and I thought, you know, I totally reject this. I reject the idea that I deserved what happened to me, and I rejected the idea that my husband deserved what happened to him. And so basically I rejected the New Age sort of doctrines. So, I mean, basically everything I was looking at, and I had a desperate need to make sense of things, everything I was looking at to me didn't seem to be very rational. And it also seemed to be very unloving. To tell somebody that whose husband had died in a bombing because of violent terrorists, and to leave me crippled for life, that it was somehow my fault, or that God had allowed that, or that that was serving some sort of purpose, and God was helping develop my character. I actually heard that from one person. Oh, this is an opportunity for you to grow. And I thought, you know, even a parent wouldn't do that to a child. This is a barbaric God that people believe in. Pardon?
An abusive parent would do that.
So it sounded like a very abusive God to me, not a God I wanted to believe in.
Yeah, I have, you know, I reached similar conclusions in that, what is this business about? Somehow this is all my fault, which Bob and I have discussed on and in a previous, Jason and I talked about original sin, the whole concept of original sin as being some kind of justification for this punitive action by the so-called the deity of these revealed religions. That and this is something I find that many that you did, they all have in common, that somehow you deserve all the bad stuff that happens to you because of some convoluted concept of made-up reality.
Do you know what? I tell you, something I find really pertinent about that, you know, about a God like that is, I spent my professional life as a social worker working with abused children. And one of the things that that abusers say to the people they abuse is that they deserve it. And it sounds strange that I had to spend my life telling these children that nothing they had done would cause them to deserve to be treated like that. And yet the very same thing seems to be coming out of the mouths of some people's gods. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm making the link here. It's an abusive philosophy.
Yes.
To me, it's an abusive philosophy.
Good.
Yeah.
I agree. So I'm kind of jumping ahead here, I suppose, but at some point you discovered deistic ideas and deistic thought.
The other thing I started to notice was that that one of the things that had brought us forward in life was actually science. And that a lot of the best help I was getting was from scientific medicine. And I thought, you know, I started to look at the history of medicine and the history of science, and I saw that the revealed religions had done, and especially Christianity, had actually gone out of its way to suppress the findings of scientists in the past, and had acted as a very regressive force. You know, these people were burnt at the stake, excommunicated, tortured. And yet it was by the courage of those people that I was actually having pain medication that worked. So and I was praying as well, and I thought, you know, I went through this period and I thought, there's no one there. No one's listening. No one's listening. There's nothing. There's nothing there. And so I went to basically look at atheism, which is a philosophy I've never, ever considered in my life. And I was getting quite depressed thinking, well, you know, so if there's nothing there, what's the point of all this? And then what happened to me has no meaning, you know. And I actually read a book called The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins.
Right.
And it was by reading that book, this is so paradoxical, but I like paradoxes anyway, so that doesn't matter, that I saw the word deist. And I thought, what's a deist? I've never heard of a deist. And I read the whole book, and he does quite a good expose, I must say, I believe, of the Bible. I read the whole book, and this thing kept nagging me, because he mentioned deists who rejected Christianity but still believed in a God. And I'd come across this brief phrase, the age of reason, and I thought, do you know, I went to my library and I said, do you have a book called The Age of Reason? And they said, oh yes, that's by Thomas Paine. And I started reading the book, and you know, it examines the Bible, and I remember sitting in a cafe, and the reverend of the local church that I used to go to some years back came in and said, what are you reading? I said, I'm reading reading The Age of Reason.
Are you reading it?
And he said, well, you know, you can't believe all you read in that. And I thought, but you can't believe all you read in the Bible either.
Good for you.
But I read that, and it just captivated me. And so I thought, I wonder if there's anybody around these days who actually believes in this stuff still, you know, because this is 200 years ago. And I put the word deist into Google, and I eventually ended up on the World Union of Deists. And I must have spent about 3 weeks reading everything on there, you know, and really
wonderful.
Thinking things over.
That's wonderful.
And then I thought, that's it.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. That's what I am. Because I looked at nature and I looked at science, and I love nature and science. And I thought, you know, there's order and there's design and there's beauty. And why would all those things happen by accident? But here's a way of believing in God without taking in all the sort of revealed religions and being told that you've got to believe even when it doesn't make sense. And that's why I ended up sending an email to Bob, and it's been my sustaining force
going
ever
from
since.
There.
And
wonderful.
It makes everything make sense.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
I know there are some atheists, probably Dawkins in particular, you know, that deism is just atheism for wimps.
Yeah, he says watered down theism. That's what he says in his book. And it's not.
Yeah,
it's not.
No. It's not. You know, it's not that we have to have a God. You know, that's what atheists don't realize, that they're actually operating in a belief system of their own, and that is that they are choosing to believe that there is no higher intelligence, higher entity. Nature shows us that there are different levels of life.
Mm-hmm.
Some are more aware of their surroundings than others.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have the capacity to understand their surroundings other than the immediate locale that they're in. And we have everything from the microbes, mitochondria, all the way up to whether humankind is at the apex of the evolutionary process or creation.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't argue for or against that, but we are here, dynamic, and we believe. And nothing wrong with believing that there is a deity as opposed to believing that there is not a deity. And I think the problem I have with atheism is that it tends to believe toward the negative rather than believe toward the positive.
One of the things I did when I was in a lot of pain is I started investigating what physical pain was. It's a very, very complex subject, actually. It's not fully understood, but as I read lots of science articles about the nerves and how the body worked and things like that, and one of the things that really impressed me as I started to study how the human body is put together is how marvelous it is. And the idea that could come about as a result of an accident.
Beneficial chance.
It just doesn't. And, you know, I don't have a problem with evolution, because I can conceive of God or the creative force, as some people might choose to express their concept of God. There's no problem with believing with that and with evolution. In fact, there would be more of a problem for me to believe in evolution and to believe that there wasn't some sort of like intelligent force actually behind that, because it doesn't appear.
I've often,
you know.
Yeah. I was just going to say.
There you go.
I'm still here. I've often thought that evolutionists are a little schizophrenic, in that they're just very adamant that, you know, that there is no God, that it's all we're the process of an evolutionary process.
Uh-huh.
But yet they say, they treat nature as if nature is an intelligent entity. And nature decides that this is going to happen. A fish, you know, living in a lightless cave, a total mm-hmm. darkness cave, doesn't need its eyes, so therefore it loses them. And that's nature that decides these things. And it's like, well, wait a minute, is nature an intelligent force or not?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things I noticed when I started reading the atheist literature, I noticed a lot of them put nature with a capital N. And
yeah,
also, when I read Richard Dawkins' writings, he had to keep using the word design, always put in inverted commas, and also that random selection decided. Well,
uh-huh.
you know, so if random selection is deciding to do something, what is the agency by which that decision is being made? You know, it doesn't. Do you know what I'm saying?
And if it's deciding, is that really random?
Exactly. You know, if a decision requires somebody to have an agency or some entity to have an agency to decide that. So even at the lowest level, I started reading about the bacteria in my body.
Sure.
And even bacteria sort of makes, at a very, very low level, a decision. It, not as we understand it, obviously, but it doesn't just operate randomly. It operates according to some sort of instructions that it's being given by something.
Right.
And I call that something God.
Right. And this is what I like about deism, is that we're not telling anybody who or what God is. What I'm starting to say is that one of the things that bothered me was the hijacking of the term intelligent design by the creationists.
Yeah.
The people
mm-hmm.
who like
mm-hmm.
use that to support a biblical version, because I think mm-hmm. intelligent design is a wonderful term,
mm-hmm.
Descriptive term for the creative force or nature's
mm-hmm.
God,
mm-hmm.
any way that you wanted to do it. But now it's become it's become a boogeyman word.
Mm-hmm.
You say intelligent design, and they go, "Oh, you mean creationism?" And they're like, "No, not necessarily. I believe in a creator, but I'm not going to tell you how it was done and why and all the other stuff."
When I first heard the words intelligent design, because I heard it in Britain and it didn't have the creationist connotation here,
right.
at least not in the last 10 years, I thought, this was a long time before I'd heard of deism. I thought, oh, somebody who thinks like me, evolution has an intelligent design behind it. And then I came to understand that it was being used by creationists, and I didn't mean it in the same sense that they meant it. And it was when
right.
I came to deism that I found out other people were meaning it in the same sense that I meant it, that there
right.
was a process.
Right.
of evolution, and it had an intelligent force behind it. Mm.
Well, you know, this is something thing that I have found that religious fundamentalists of revealed religions often do, and that is they co-opt terminology for their own use, twist the meaning, and it ends up being something different than what it is. And I don't know how we can recapture intelligent design. I will just continue to use it regardless.
Mm.
And if somebody accuses me of being a creationist, I'll ask them, what does that mean? What do you mean by a creationist? And normally, most usage people use creationist, they mean that you believe in the Genesis mythology. I disagree with them on that then at that point, and we find out we usually have more to agree on than disagree. But it's a long process. It's arduous sometimes.
It's very hard. I find it very hard to understand that otherwise intelligent people can actually believe that in a literal sense, the Garden of Eden story. Even I've even spoke to Christians here who are not fundamentalists, who basically say it's a metaphor. But it does seem to be, even here, I can tell you, even in the UK, the fundamentalist Christians are increasing. It's the fastest growing religion here at the moment is the fundamentalist Christians growing. Yeah. So I think that's why we need deism here in the UK.
I think deism, we need a new enlightenment and...
Sure.
And deism, I think, can lead the way. I think deism is fundamentally necessary for freedom and liberty. And I know that the, as we call them, the founding fathers of the American experiment, were heavily influenced by deism, which came out of the European Enlightenment, and through their efforts, the rest of, as we call, the Western world developed and became more democratic and more population directed types of government, and obtained freedom and tried to limit government activity and government control. And, of course, now we're seeing that go the opposite way. And when you have bad economic times, people revert to very simplistic methodology, belief systems.
Agree with you about the psychology of, in tough times, people want to cling to something that feels certain. And I actually believe that that's... why people want to change, to cling to things that are fundamentalist, because they, it appears to give them, people, a degree of security. But I think one of the good things about deism is you can have a sense of security without having to give up your right to think. You can still have a sense of security. I don't think atheism can give anybody much of a sense of security, but to believe or to trust that there is some sort of guiding intelligence running the universe that doesn't require you to give up your own intelligence. Through that, deism can provide the emotional security that people need also. That's how I feel about deism.
Wonderful. I agree with you 100% as people go through tough times. I was just going to relate very quickly that in the United States, the big resurgence in fundamentalist Christianity occurred during very difficult emotional or economic times in this country. And this is what gave rise to that kind of thinking. So I agree, the psychological component in this is I think it's indisputable.
It's happening here, too.
I agree with you.
It's happening here.
Sure. As we're having a worldwide economic crisis, sure, we're going to see more and more religious fundamentalism, which means there's going to be more war, more people killing each other in the name of their gods. And this is ludicrous.
Well, it's religious fundamentalism that basically blew up my husband. You know, the shift to fundamentalism is going on across all the revealed religions. I don't know much about Judaism, but I know that some people, I believe some Jewish people are claiming rights in Israel because of Israel being the promised land or something like that from God. So there's the shift across all the Abrahamic faith, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam is towards fundamentalism, and it's frightening. It frightens me, actually, I will say. Having been through this experience, I mean, most people can sit and watch the TV and hear these people talk about their fundamentalism and their violence, and fundamentalism always, when it's pushed to the edge, seems to bring out the violence in people. But as somebody who's actually been on the sharp edge of that, it's a terrifying thought to think that those sort of ideas are gaining hold in the world. It's very frightening.
Yeah. And why would this is the thing that gets me about the contrast between, we'll say, religious fundamentalism, regardless of what revealed religious, but as you pointed out, the top three are part of the Abrahamic covenant type of belief system.
Mm-hmm.
Why would people choose such a punitive, vindictive type of philosophical religious belief system when there's so much freedom and joy and intellectual honesty, philosophical honesty, within deism?
Well, I was just about to sort of give my answer to that, is because most people have not been presented with it. You see, when I was looking for a meaning to what happened to me, the only thing that the only two sort of like different, largely prevailing explanations for the world were either religious, which relied on faith, which is believing that which is not evident, and asks you to stop thinking.
Because you believe in it, therefore it's true.
Yeah, I mean, and the only alternative I found. But the only alternative I found to that for a long time before I came across deism was atheism, which allows you to think but doesn't allow you to take your intelligence as far as confirming that there does a, you know, that there is an active intelligence in the world. So they appear to be, so it unless you come across deism, it's hard to believe in a God or trust in a God without basically abandoning your intelligence. And mm-hmm. and this is why I think people do need to know about deism. I would have loved to have known about deism a lot earlier than I did, but I'm glad I found it eventually. But, you know, the question, why don't people why don't people sort of use their intelligence to know that there is an alternative to fundamentalist religions and revealed religions? Is because I think lots of people think the only alternative is atheism, and people can't quite comprehend that. And if deism was known,
a big step for people.
Mm-hmm. When I discuss deism with my friends, I discuss it quite widely. I say, just put it to the test, you know, go on the evidence. For me, it's intellectually fulfilling because looking at what's around, there is evidence. There's evidence through nature and through science. And I think also, you know, I've thought about if there's life after death, and I think I agree with Thomas Paine. I don't know. But what I do believe with deism is that whether there's life after death or not, what I am going to do is appreciate the life I have now, live that life with meaning. That life, we're not living in a random universe. Our life has meaning. Part of the joy of being able to think is to be alive, to explore the world that God created. You know, the universe is wonderful.
Sure.
It uplifts me. It uplifts me. It gives me.
It's freedom instilling. It's wonderful. My wife and I were talking about this just last night. That especially right after she read your article, she was like, absolutely. Life is for living now, for experiencing now, and not worrying about some afterlife. Mm-hmm. You know, this mm-hmm. is the life we have now. Let's enjoy it. And that's part of the problem with revealed religions, is that they're always attaching some form of encumbrance to your enjoyment of life now.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing I didn't really include in my last article, but just speaking to you now, I think about it, is joy is the opposite of fear. And I do believe that I find deism very joyous because I'm allowed to be myself. I have something secure to believe in, based on evidence, and I'm encouraged to think for myself. But I look at the other, especially I can speak mainly about Christianity, but I also read the Quran, and they are very, very, very much based on fear. Fear and joy are opposites, and I don't believe in a God who created how we are, which is wonderful, and the whole of creation is wonderful, to spend our lives being afraid. That doesn't make any sense to me. If you look at animals, they're not afraid. They're full of joy, you know. The idea
well,
that God...
It depends on the animal, whether it's the animal, predator
it's
or prey.
But when they're not, when they're beyond their survival instinct, you know what I mean?
Right.
Obviously, they're going to be afraid if they're being in the process of probably being eaten. But in the when that's gone beyond that, when the physical... I mean, human beings, through revealed religions, are the only people... We live, at least in the West, I mean, I'm talking about living in the West, where most of us now have had all our material needs met. You know, we're not living scraping... an existence anymore. Most of us have food on the table, but we're still living in fear because of these religions.
Yes.
How strange
yes.
is that? Most animals, when their physical needs have been met, don't spend their lives living in fear. They have a joyful existence. But we...
Yeah, they seem to be happy.
Because of our convoluted... Yes. Because of the convoluted way these revealed religions have... come to present themselves to people. We have people who live in.
I'm sorry, I was interrupting. I was just going to jump off of what you were saying. That fear is for compliance.
Control.
Control. Fear is used
control.
To keep people in line and keep them in the in the belief system. And it's. There's a purpose to that, to instilling that fear of eventual eternal punishment, or that you're going to miss out on something.
They'd be very threatened by deism. Then think for yourself, a religion that a philosophy or a religion that thinks encourages you to think for yourself would be quite threatening to them. I would think.
Yeah.
Such as deism.
Yeah. Deism. And this is, I started to allude to this a little earlier, but I honestly believe that liberty and freedom come out of deism.
Mm-hmm.
You have enlightened persons who then try to create a social structure based on a deistic worldview. It's going to be a freer social structure than as we see arising now today, the fascist police state authoritarianism throughout Western the Western world. After so many years of condemning the communist bloc countries for being atheistic and communistic, we're turning around and actually creating a very similar type of social structure based on fear.
Yeah,
and it's
I agree.
It's nuts. It's crazy. People, freedom-loving people, should be embracing deism. And a thought that occurred to me as we were speaking earlier also is, you know, about spreading the word, and that maybe it's because people haven't heard about deism, and maybe that's the truth. Maybe deists need to be a little more, I hate to use the word, but evangelical. Evangelize. Basically, they need to spread the word.
I agree. And the sort of comments I get when I tell people I'm a deist is, oh, I haven't heard of that, the first thing is. But then the sort of second comment is, I believe there's something, but I've never liked religion. And what they mean when they say that is established, organized, revealed religions, yeah. Oh, I know there's something, it makes sense, there's something, but I don't like religion. because I don't like being told what to think. You know, I don't like being told I've got to believe something that I don't really in my heart believe. And then I say, you don't have to do that. Think for yourself. And some people try to tell me, or rather ask me, to give them answers. And I say, no. You know, you were given reason as a gift, yes, from God, which is second only to life. And that's part of, in a sense, that's part of why you were created, to be able to think for yourself. So let's have a discussion. But I'm not going to say, here are the answers. I've got all the answers. I'm still searching myself. But it's a very, very, it's a very joyous exploration. It's not based on insecurity. It's based on, point on it. To get to know God. To get to know the real through reason. It's joyous.
Yes.
It keeps me alive. It makes me get up. It makes me get up in the morning.
There you
go.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Well, I think we're about out of time for this podcast. And Linda from Great Britain, I want to thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to talk with you and an encouragement to keep plugging along here. And folks, thank you for tuning in and downloading and listening to the podcast here, the World Union of Deists. We have some more interesting guests coming up and topics that we'll be discussing. And please, if you have any comments or would like more information, please, you can contact me, Tim, T-I-M, at deism, deism.com. And that's my email address. You can also go to our contact page on our website, www.deism.com. And you will have emails for people that may be in your locale. And, of course, you can always send letters and inquiries and information to deism@deism.com. And we will be happy to get back to you and continue the discussion. Look for us on Facebook, World Union of Deists, on a Facebook page and a Facebook group. And we have, plenty of resources. And Linda already talked about how she spent weeks looking at the Deism website. We have a lot of free information there for you. Educate yourself. Give yourself the tools to be a reasonable person. And Linda, thank you once again for being with us and sharing your life and your story and your insights. I so appreciate that. So appreciate the struggles and the difficulties you've gone through, and so happy that you came out on the bright side, so to speak.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're quite welcome. So, folks, well, you can hear the music in the background, and we're about ready to sign off here. We're out of time, so just remember, God gave us reason and not religion. Tim Wingate for World Union of Deists. Signing off this time. See you again. Distance in your eyes. Oh no, I've said too much. I set it up. That's me in the corner.
Sign up now for your free monthly online subscription to Think Online and receive in your email the first Monday morning of every month an insightful, thought-provoking World Union of Deists webzine. Each issue is loaded with mind-expanding ideas and practical ways we can work together to build a more enlightened and progressive tomorrow. Also, news you may have missed and WUD updates. You will also receive our Deism webzine, Bruno's, and Ripoll's Bulletin. It's all free. Named after the heroic free thinkers, Filippo, Giordano, Bruno, and Cayetano Ripalda. Bruno was burned alive by the Catholic Church on February 17, 1600, for refusing to play along with their dogmatic ignorance of nature and reality. Cayetano Ripalda was hanged on July 26, 1826, on orders of the Spanish Inquisition for being a deist, for teaching others about deism. He was the last person to be murdered by the Spanish Inquisition. Both of these men are true heroes and are shining examples to all deists and free thinkers of courage and integrity in the face of Christian, religious, ignorance, and brutality. They're also reminders to us all what happens when the revealed religions go unchecked. For your free Think Online webzine, simply send an email to thinkonline@deism.com stating that you would like a free subscription to Think Online, along with the email addresses of any gift subscriptions you'd like us to send. So send that to thinkonline@deism.com and just tell us where you would like your free subscription to go to. Also know this, that we will never sell or give anyone's email address or name to anyone for any reason.